Welcome to the Shortwave Report for November 11th, 2011. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for the show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past four shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK World Radio Japan, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Spanish National Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, and The Voice of Russia. If you use shortwave, please note that the times and frequencies have changed for most stations since the end of daylight saving time, so have a pen ready to take notes. We'll begin with NHK World Radio Japan. Japan says that it will take more than 30 years to scrap the destroyed nuclear power plants at Fukushima. In Idaho, at least six workers were exposed to low-level radiation at a nuclear research facility. Researchers will check radiation levels every 100 meters in the 20-kilometer exclusion zone around the Fukushima nuclear power plants. NHK World Radio Japan.
Japan's Atomic Energy Commission has compiled a report saying it will take more than 30 years to scrap the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. The commission's panel of experts had been discussing the schedule since August. The report released on Wednesday says transferring spent fuel from the plant's four damaged reactor buildings to a pool inside the compound will begin within 3 years after the reactors achieve cold shutdown. Removing the melted fuel inside the number one through number three reactors will begin within 10 years. The reactor's containment vessels must first be repaired and filled with water to block radiation. The schedule is based on the handling of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island in 1979. But the situation at the Fukushima Daiichi is far more serious because three reactors suffered simultaneous meltdowns. It could take more than 30 years to extract the nuclear fuel, dismantle the reactors, and turn the compound into a vacant lot. The report recommends that the government and the plant's operator, Tokyo Electric Power Company, set up a new task force to lead this unprecedented project. It also calls for cooperation with overseas research institutions and construction of a facility near the plant to examine extracted fuel and other waste material.
At least six workers have been exposed to low-level radiation at a nuclear research facility in the western U.S. state of Idaho. In making the announcement on Tuesday, the Idaho National Laboratory denied the possibility of radioactive leakage outside the facility. The laboratory said 17 people were working in a facility where nuclear fuel was stored on Tuesday afternoon when a container of radioactive substances accidentally opened. The workers were rushed to a hospital. Six of them were confirmed to have been exposed to low-level radiation from plutonium-related materials. The 17 workers remain under close observation. The laboratory is looking into why and how the container opened.
The Environment Ministry has launched a detailed survey of radiation levels in areas near the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. This information will enable the government to pinpoint which areas in the irradiated 20-kilometer zone of the plant need to be decontaminated first. Areas with radiation levels of about 20 millisieverts per year will also be included. About 30 people, including ministry officials and Tokyo Electric Power Company staff, gathered at monitoring point in Itade Village. The village is in a government-designated evacuation zone, from which all residents were ordered to leave. Radiation levels for the survey will be measured at 100-meter intervals at an altitude of 50 meters, using unmanned helicopters and cars. The ministry will provide an interim report on the results in December. In the 12 designated municipalities, three corporations commissioned by the government have been selected to carry out the survey on how to proceed with the decontamination work effectively. The ministry is set to begin full-scale cleanup efforts from next January, according to the result of these surveys. A ministry senior official said he hopes the survey and decontamination work will move forward quickly to allow some 100,000 evacuees to return to their homes.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan, heard from 9 to 9:30 p.m. at 6110 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I'm announcing are now for Pacific Standard Time, so adjust them to your time zone. Next, Radio Deutsche Welle. The Chinese president visited Austria before attending the G20 summit last week. European politicians and business leaders courted him for bailout money, while protesters were kept far away. Countries outside the Eurozone are worried that the euro debt crisis could infect their economies. Italy will enact further austerity measures, and Berlusconi claims that he will step down as prime minister. The European Commission warned of the dangers of a possible split-up of the Eurozone. Radio Deutsche Welle.
China's President Hu Jintao made a three-day visit to Austria ahead of the G20 summit in France. Cash-rich China is seen by Europe's leaders as one of the keys to unlocking the bloc's debt crisis. As Kerry Skyring reports from Vienna, the Chinese leader was courted by politicians and business leaders while protesters were kept well away.
Protesters, Tibetan, Uyghur and Falun Gong, outside Austria's National Theatre. Police kept them well away from President Hu Jintao. In fact, they couldn't get anywhere near his motorcade, but they made certain he could hear them. A visit by a Chinese head of state to Europe is usually dominated by two major issues, trade and human rights. But a third issue turned this trip into a tense and crucial one for the countries of the Eurozone. Put simply, Europe has massive debts, and China has massive currency reserves. Austria, the host country for Hu Jintao's European working holiday, is one of the Eurozone countries hoping China will shore up its banks and buy up its sovereign debt. Chancellor Werner Faymann says talks with Hu Jintao centered on the recent bailout deal for Greece.
He wanted to know my thoughts on the protective measures and the recent developments, and he especially remarked on Austria as being economically strong.
But with Europe listening closely, the Chinese leader had only a few words on the debt crisis.
China is watching the current economic developments in Europe. We are convinced Europe has the wisdom and competence to conquer its momentary difficulties.
Austria turned on a traditional welcome for the man described by Forbes magazine as the world's most powerful. Brass bands, a visit to a Salzburg dairy, and a Mozart concert were all unashamedly directed at Chinese television viewers, a tourist market increasingly valuable to Austria. But as their leaders caught Chinese cash, Austrians worry about selling off the farm. Several local high-tech companies now have Chinese owners. Walter Koren from the Chamber of Commerce says that's a good sign.
First, because we have well-trained workers. Second, the social cohesiveness with very high productivity. And third is the strength of innovation in Austrian businesses.
It's not one-way traffic. 600 Austrian companies now have branches in China. Many are meeting China's demand for environmental technology. But Willy Opitz, a winemaker, is enthusiastically selling the fruits of his labor in the world's largest market.
We have an image that is unique, and we must use it. But you've got to get out there. The profit has to go to the mountain. The Chinese people are ready.
A 150-person business delegation traveled with Hu Jintao, leaving no doubt the Chinese are more than ready to do business. But the question of whether Beijing will help Europe by buying up risky, along with safe, government bonds was left unanswered. Christoph Leitl is president of the Austrian Chamber of Economics and says China faces a paradox.
The Chinese say, on one side we're wanted and on the other side we're not wanted. By this, they mean when we're getting involved somewhere, there are concerns that one day we'll dominate.
Oh, no. Europe's debt crisis and China's economic power meant these protesters against human rights abuses were left out in the cold. Austrian President Heinz Fischer says he delivered this rather indirect message to Hu Jintao.
We've drawn attention to those rights and commitments which are important to Austria in relation to human rights and which stem from our membership of the United Nations Commission on Human Rights.
Hu Jintao spent 3 days in Austria, and as far as journalists could tell, only a few minutes of his time were devoted to global issues, and none to answering journalists' questions. People travelling with him say the usually stiff statesman was simply enjoying a holiday ahead of the G20 summit. Kerry Skyring, Deutsche Welle Radio, Vienna.
Policymakers outside the Eurozone area are keeping up the pressure for more decisive action to stop the debt crisis from spreading. On a first visit to China since becoming head of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde told the Financial Forum in Beijing that Europe's debt crisis risks plunging the global economy into a Japan-style lost decade. Lagarde did say steps agreed to by leaders at last week's G20 summit of the world's leading global economies provided some encouragement.
I'm very pleased to see that the Europeans have decided to accelerate the work and to make sure that all the guidelines and all the terms and conditions applicable to the leveraging effect that they have conceded will be in place before the end of November, so that their fund is actually operational and can, I suppose, be raising funds as of December.
Lagarde warned that if nations did not act boldly, the global economy would run the risk of a downward spiral of uncertainty, the effects of which would also reach Asia. Italian President Giorgio Napolitano says the country's parliament will pass a package of crucial economic reforms by Sunday at the latest. Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has promised to resign after this in a bid to halt market turmoil and leave politics altogether. Italy's borrowing costs on Wednesday soared to a euro-era record of more than 7% for 10-year bonds. That's the mark that sent Ireland and Portugal to the European Union for a bailout, as it reflects investor concerns that they will not get their money back. EU financial monitors audited the books of Italy's central bank on Wednesday to get a better idea of the country's debt situation. Italy is the second most indebted country in the eurozone after Greece and needs 300 billion euros a year to pay its debt.
European Commission President José Manuel Barroso has issued a stern warning of the dangers of splitting the eurozone as the debt crisis intensifies. Barroso said that Europe could only prosper if all member states work together. He also said that belonging to the eurozone should define the EU. His comments came after German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Nicolas Sarkozy both called for deep structural reforms. Sarkozy even advocated a two-speed Europe, and Merkel said that the rest of the world would not wait for Europe to get its act together.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which has dropped its excellent radio podcast, Newslink, in favor of a combined audio-video website that may be found at http://mediacenter.dw-world.de. On to Spanish National Radio. Spain's High Court has sentenced the former military leader of the Basque separatist group ETA to 105 years in prison. Russia warned the West that any military action against Iran would have unpredictable consequences. A retired right-wing military general has been elected to the presidency of Guatemala. Daniel Ortega won a landslide third term as president of Nicaragua. Spanish National Radio.
Spain's High Court has sentenced the former military chief of the terrorist organization ETA to a total of 105 years in jail. Francisco Javier García Gaztelu, also known by the name Chapote, was found guilty of ordering the assassination in 2000 of a socialist politician, Fernando Buesa, and his bodyguard in the Basque capital, Vitoria. It's the first sentence passed by the High Court since the announcement several weeks ago by the Basque group that they were ending their terrorist campaign. Russia has warned the West that military action against Iran would be a very serious mistake fraught with unpredictable consequences. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said diplomacy, not missile strikes, was the only way to solve the Iranian nuclear problem. His comments come after Israeli President Shimon Peres said an attack on Iran was becoming more likely. The UN's atomic watchdog is expected to say this week that Iran is secretly developing a nuclear arms capability. Diplomats say the International Atomic Energy Agency report, due for release tomorrow or Wednesday, will produce compelling evidence that Iran will find hard to dispute. A retired right-wing general promising a crackdown on violent crime has won Guatemala's presidential election held yesterday. Otto Perez will be the first military man to take power since democracy was restored in the Central American country in 1986. General Perez has just over 54% support, with results in from 98% of polling stations, while his rival, wealthy businessman Manuel Baldizón, trailed with slightly less than 46%. Nicaragua's President Daniel Ortega, a former Marxist rebel leader and Cold War enemy of the United States, is set to secure a controversial third term with a landslide victory in the country's presidential election. Mr. Ortega won more than 60% of the vote, with his closest rival, Fabio Gadea, on 25%, according to early results from yesterday's polls. Supporters of Mr. Ortega's Sandinista party have been celebrating, but the opposition said that there had been electoral fraud. Mr. Ortega was allowed to run after the Sandinista-controlled Supreme Court overturned a ban on consecutive terms.
Those reports were from Spanish National Radio, now heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 5970 and podcasting at www.rtve.es. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. University students and professors from around Colombia marched to Bogota to demonstrate against new government controls on higher education. Student protesters in Chile were banned from demonstrating in front of the congressional building. Syria has formally accused the United States of direct participation in sedition and violence against the government. The editor of the Executive Intelligence Review said that an attack on Iran could lead to the Third World War. Iran's President Ahmadinejad said that his country will not step back from its nuclear program despite accusations that they are developing nuclear weapons. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Thousands of Colombian university students, professors, and workers are heading for the capital, Bogota, from different places of the country to demonstrate on November 10th against a draft legislation aimed at controlling public universities. According to the Students' National Table Organization, delegations from all the country's universities will come together in the capital city, while representatives of human rights committees in southern Bogota are supporting the demonstrations. Students' leaders in Chile criticized the decision of the government to prevent them from protesting in front of the Congress building and described the measure as a provocation against the social movement for education. "This is political and direct provocation to generate violence," said the president of the Student Federation of the Valparaíso University, Sebastián Fartán, cited by Chile's cooperative radio. "By all means, that was the objective of our demonstration," said Fartán in reference to a protest action scheduled as debates took place at the Chilean parliament on a draft legislation on the country's 2011 budget.
Syria has formally accused the United States of direct participation in sedition and violence against the government in Damascus. In a protest letter sent to the UN Security Council, the Arab League, as well as to the governments of Russia and China, Syrian Foreign Minister Walid al-Muala says that Damascus took an important step to stop the violence by signing an agreement with the Arab League to release hundreds of prisoners and declare a general amnesty. According to the protest note, the Syrian government was shocked by the immediate announcement of the US State Department calling on opposition groups not to hand over their weapons and encouraging armed groups to continue their actions against the government. Damascus said that armed groups are being financed from abroad and expressed the hope that once all the details about US involvement in the bloody events are revealed, the international community will strongly condemn Washington and other countries implicated in the violence.
The editor of the U.S. weekly magazine Executive Intelligence Review, Edward Spanaus, said that an attack on Iran could lead to the Third World War. The Obama administration's strategy for re-election is to start wars, but if the U.S. were to attack Iran, it would end up in a World War III, the political analyst told Press TV. Iran and Syria are at the top of the list of countries that the United States would first attack, said Spanaus, and he noted that Obama's puppet masters, the people who pull his strings, do want war. On potential military actions by the Western military alliance of NATO against Syria, he said such a measure would function to precede similar ones against other countries.
Iran's president says his country will not budge one iota from its nuclear program, despite new allegations it may be trying to develop nuclear weapons. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said a new report by the UN's nuclear watchdog, the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, was based on empty claims provided by the United States. France and the U.S. say they will consider fresh sanctions against Iran, while there are reports that Israel may be preparing to launch a military attack against Tehran. Iran has long insisted that its nuclear program is solely for civilian purposes. In a televised speech, the Iranian president said that his country would not back down over its nuclear program and asked why the UN agency would damage its dignity because of Washington's unsubstantiated claims. Referring to the United States, the Iranian leader said, "We will not build two bombs in the face of your 20,000. We will develop something you cannot respond to, which is ethics, humanity, solidarity, and justice." And the Iranian president added, "You should know that no enemy of the Iranian people has ever tasted victory."
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba, heard from 2 p.m. to 3 at 11760, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6060, 6010, or 6000. Also streaming on the web at www.radiohc.cu, and that streaming is from 5 to 11 p.m. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or would like to make a donation for production costs of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please support this program like another listener did in Willits, California this week. We will conclude with the voice of Russia. A report on the situation that Iran was secretly working on nuclear weapons and that Israel is preparing for an attack on Iran. The voice of Russia.
Somewhat suddenly last week, news media was awash with reports that Israel is preparing for an attack on Iran. The source of the stories began with a leaked report by the International Atomic Energy Agency, which indicated that Iran's nuclear program is considerably closer to the development of a nuclear weapon than was previously suspected. The stories didn't really heat up, however, until Sunday, when Israeli President Shimon Peres warned that an attack on Iran was becoming increasingly likely.
Speaking to the Israel Hayom Daily, Peres said, "The possibility of a military attack against Iran is now closer to being applied than the application of a diplomatic option." He added, "We must stay calm and resist pressure so that we can consider every alternative." Just the day before, Peres had also told Israel's Channel 2 television that an attack was becoming more and more likely.
Leaders from around the world responded quickly to Peres' remarks and almost unanimously called on Israel to back away from such sword-rattling statements. French Foreign Minister Alain Juppé said that an attack on Iran would be disastrous. Juppé told Europe One Radio that sanctions in place can be strengthened, saying, "We will continue on this path because a military intervention could create a situation that completely destabilizes the region." Juppé added somewhat ominously, "Everything must be done to avoid the irreversible."
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov also responded with concern on Monday, saying that a military attack by Israel would be a mistake fraught with unpredictable consequences. Speaking at a press conference, Lavrov expanded his comments to the use of military force in general, telling reporters, "We are convinced by this every day when we see how problems are dealt with in regard to Iran, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan or what's happening in other countries in the region. Military intervention only greatly increases the number of victims."
Irish Foreign Minister Eamon Gilmore, who is currently on a diplomatic visit to Moscow, supported Lavrov's call for a peaceful approach to the issue. After a joint briefing with the Russian counterpart, Gilmore told reporters that Ireland is categorically opposed to an Israeli military intervention in the affairs of Iran. According to Newsroom.com, Gilmore said that Ireland would resist such an attack, as it is not something that could make progress in settling the Iranian nuclear issue.
In another sign that Israel is increasing its aggressive rhetoric against Iran, the country's media has become consumed by the idea of an attack. According to Agence France-Presse, in recent days, speculation in Israel has grown about the possibility of a preemptive strike against Iranian nuclear facilities, with Haaretz newspaper reporting that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Ehud Barak were seeking cabinet support for an attack.
The AFP also reports that last week the Israeli military carried out a large-scale civil defense drill, which simulated a response to possible missile attacks from Iran. As the AFP noted, Israeli officials claimed that the military drills had been planned long ago. However, they clearly added to the perception that the country is indeed planning an attack on Iran. Causing even more concern, Haaretz reported that thus far Israel has refused requests from U.S. officials to coordinate any attack plans with Washington.
The Israeli people appear to be evenly divided over whether or not they believe their country should attack Iran. In a poll commissioned by the Haaretz Daily and released last Thursday by the Dialogue Polling Institute, 41% of Israelis said they would support an attack on Iran's nuclear facilities, which many Israelis believe were built specifically for the production of nuclear bombs. However, 39% are opposed to such an attack, and 20% remain undecided.
The country's leaders are apparently less divided on the issue, as Haaretz reports that a majority of Israel's security cabinet are still opposed to an attack on Iran. According to AFP, on Monday, Barak denied reports that he and Netanyahu had already decided to attack Iran over the opposition of military and intelligence chiefs, though the defense minister did say situations could arise in the Middle East under which Israel must defend its vital interests independently without having to rely on regional or other forces.
Meanwhile, in an interview with Egyptian newspaper Al-Akhbar, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad repeated his stance that Iran's program is strictly intended for peaceful purposes. Ahmadinejad also claimed that Israel and the U.S. are looking to rally support for an attack against Iran and warned that his country is ready to defend itself.
That report was from the Voice of Russia. Russia is now heard from 6 p.m. to 10 at 12030 13665 9840 and 7250 or through their website www.english.ruvr.ru. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Standard Time. Please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people to listen to international broadcasts using a shortwave radio at home. It's far simpler than you might think. However, if you use the internet, listening globally is also quite easy. See the links at this program's website. Every Friday morning, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters, make a safe donation through PayPal, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.